Omaha Public Radio presents another program from the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce on Noon Forum. We'll hear highlights from the 2015 Chamber of Commerce annual meeting, including remarks by the newly inaugurated governor of Nebraska, Pete Ricketts, and the keynote address presented this year by special guest speaker Michael Corbat, chief executive officer of Citigroup. He'll speak on the topic, the role of the financial sector in supporting the United States and global economies, 2015 and beyond. The speakers will be introduced by Steve Saline, Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce Board Chairman. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday afternoon, January 27, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program and present this year's Chamber of Commerce Awards is David Brown, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce.
So one of the traditional elements of our annual meeting is a very important one, recognizing individuals and organizations who have strengthened our chamber and our community. So we have three awards to hand out today. Our first, the Chairman's Award of Excellence. Thanks, RJ. He's not getting the award, by the way. You want one? Sure. Our Chairman's Award of Excellence celebrates an individual who has produced exceptional chamber membership sales and retention results. And this year's honoree is Tim Reaver, Vice President of Bank of Nebraska. Presenting the award to Tim will be Mark Grebe, our 2014 Membership Chair, and our Chamber Chairman for 2014, Steve Saline. Tim is a member of the President's Club, which is the Chamber's elite volunteer sales force. His consistent production throughout the year, week after week, was instrumental to the Chamber's membership success in 2014. In fact, Tim's sales prowess earned him an Honorary Life Membership Award in 2014. That's an honor reserved for those salespeople who sold 50 new Chamber members in one 12-month period. That's outstanding. Very nice work, Tim. Tim, we really appreciate your commitment to our organization. Thank you and congratulations. Our next award is the Headliner of the Year. It's given to an organization that has positively impacted Nebraska's image. Excuse me. Strong competition this year from the Audible heard around the world, Omaha, Omaha, to the Storm Chasers' second straight national championship, and of course, Terrence Bud Crawford's title fight and defense for the lightweight boxing championship all occurred in this market, gave us great opportunity to talk about Omaha around the world. So we had a lot to choose from. It was clear in the final analysis, though, that the winner for this year would be Creighton University. To receive the award is Creighton Acting President Dr. Chris Bradbury and Associate Athletic Director Mark Burgers. The award will be presented by Chris Kircher, who is our Marketing Council Chair, and Chairman Saline. Creighton's move into the Big East Conference was described as a match made in heaven, one that would elevate the school's national profile, help with recruiting, and contribute to the positive image of Omaha. Today we're honoring not only the hard work inherent in getting to a yes in those negotiations, but also the remarkable success of the Creighton men's basketball team, led by a young man with a remarkable story all of his own, Doug McDermott. Thank you, Chris and Mark, for your contribution to Creighton and the positive influence Creighton has on our community. Our final award this afternoon is our Volunteer of the Year. It recognizes a person who really goes above and beyond, offering so much of their time and effort to the Chamber and the business community. It's my pleasure to invite Clark Lauritsen, Executive Vice President of First National Bank, to join me to receive this award. Congratulations, Clark. Now, I must admit, Clark did this with a lot of hesitations, but we applaud Clark today for organizing and implementing the Chamber involvement in the passage of the Omaha Public School bond issue last November. This bond, as you all know, will fund needed facility improvements. But even more than that, it will help ensure our region has a skilled, diverse workforce that can meet the future needs of our region's new and growing businesses, a key Chamber priority. Clark, your engagement with us is incredible. Thank you, Irving, for everything you've done for us. And last but certainly not least, it's my turn to thank my boss for 2014, Steve Saline. And we're really thankful for your thoughtful leadership throughout the year and the hours you dedicated towards the Chamber and this community. When you took over as board chairman, we had huge goals set in front of us. It meant taking some risks. You provided great guidance and leadership. We took those risks, we achieved an incredible amount, and we built powerful momentum. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all that you did for Omaha, for the Chamber, and for your commitment to Omaha. We really appreciate it. It's now official.
All right, I'm done. Thanks, David, and thanks to all of the Chamber staff and volunteers. You really made my year very easy and very much fun. It has been an honor and privilege for me to serve as chair in 2014. As a lifelong citizen of Omaha who truly loves our fair city, representing its business community and promoting all aspects of Greater Omaha has been a mission that I have accepted with enthusiasm. I want to extend special thanks to my predecessors who have done such a great job making the Chamber the leading voice of business in our town. I want to specifically recognize Leslie Anderson, our public policy chair, who not only did a great job leading our public policy initiatives, but also showed great patience in the face of some very trying circumstances. Finally, special thanks to our board of directors and to our executive committee. We had some spirited discussions and faced some tough issues, but 2014 was another year of great successes for Omaha. The time and effort that the members of the board and the executive committee put into the Chamber is one of the untold stories of community service that is so much a part of why Omaha is such a great place to live, work, and play. The best part of the year, the fact that so many people, including everyone in this room, owns a piece of our success, and we're going to continue partnering for progress, working together to accomplish much more. We're energized, ready for the new year. It is game on, my friends. No coasting allowed. Believe it or not, Pete Ricketts is the first person who graduated from an Omaha high school to be elected the governor of the state of Nebraska. But more importantly, he is a businessman well known to the local community as a strong advocate for free enterprise. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our newly sworn in 40th governor of the state of Nebraska, Pete Ricketts. There you go.
Thank you very much, Steve. You know, Steve is really a smart guy. He wanted me to keep my remarks really short, so he timed it so I'm in the middle of my steak. So if I don't hurry, the steak's going to get cold, so I will keep my remarks relatively brief. Steve, thank you very much for the kind introduction and inviting me to be here today. I very much appreciate it. I am honored and humbled to be your 40th governor of the great state of Nebraska. Thank you. We have a great state, and the strength of our state lies in our people. You know, Nebraskans are engaged in their communities, in their schools, in their churches. And when we have differences, we find a way to work together to solve our common problems. And it's one of the things I really appreciate about the Chamber. You folks exemplify that. You're involved in your community by just getting together and being here and the participation in all the great things that the Omaha Chamber does. So I appreciate all you do for our state and how you help make this a great place where people want to be. And I'm especially grateful today because of all the help you've helped provide through the Omaha Chamber Foundation. What I think you did in helping us do that national job search, allowing us to hire an executive search firm to go get the best talent available for the Department of Economic Development, the Department of Corrections, and Health and Human Services, was not only key in helping us get started here in my administration, which is not even 3 weeks old yet, but it could be a model for the rest of the country about how governors think about how quickly they can get their cabinets put together. Obviously, we want to make sure we grow the state, which is why the Department of Economic Development is so critical. And we've got some challenges in some of our departments, corrections and HHS in particular. And so getting started on that as quickly as possible is key. Again, this is an innovation, I think, that we can be very proud of here in Nebraska. Again, that's one of the things about us. We're innovative. I'm pleased to let you know that for the Department of Economic Development, Brenda Hicks Sorensen will be joining the team the middle of next month. She comes to us from Wisconsin, a state very much like Nebraska, where its top industries are agriculture, manufacturing, and tourism. And so she has a lot of experience working with local communities to create plans for how we grow. She's got experience in making sure that we really get the most out of attracting businesses and growing the businesses that are here and really tapping into that potential we've had here in the state. We also have finished the job search for the Department of Corrections. Scott Frakes will be joining us from Washington State. He's got 32 years of experience, has seen a wide variety of different issues in that correctional department. And I think he'll be a great fit for here in Nebraska as far as culture. He's a very thoughtful leader that will work well, not only with the folks in the Department of Corrections, but with the folks in the unicameral as well. So I'm very excited to have him on board. And we're still getting candidates in for Health and Human Services. But again, that's a department where I'm really looking to find somebody to bring about transformational change, to really help us reform the culture so that we become more people-centric in Health and Human Services. And when we start getting better outcomes for our people, our costs will come down as well. Last week, I gave my State of the State address. And again, because my steak is on my plate right now, I won't repeat that for you. But I will kind of hit the four highlights of the things we're going to be very focused on in this coming legislative or in this legislative session we're in right now. The first is creating jobs and strengthening the economy. Again, thus the hire of Brenda Hicks Sorensen and why we were so keen to get moving on that right away. But, you know, we've got to create more and better paying jobs. We've got to keep more of our kids and grandkids here. We've got to attract more people from across the country to come here and make Nebraska their home. And so we're going to be very focused on all the things that go into that. Second, taxes. We need to address the issue with regard to taxes. My budget reflects that, putting more money into the Property Tax Credit Relief Fund. And I view this as just being a starting point for where we go with taxes. We've got a lot of work to do to become competitive with the surrounding states. And that's one of the things that often isn't talked about when we're talking about creating jobs is how we're competitive with other states. People and companies make decisions based upon our tax structure, and we've got to be more competitive. One of the issues I've heard talking to business leaders across the state is regulatory. We got to make sure that we're not putting up barriers for our companies creating jobs by too over-regulation. And here as governor, I've got a couple roles. One, standing up to the over-regulation coming to us from Washington, D.C., whether it's going to be additional employer mandates for health care, overreach by the EPA on carbon emissions or waters of the U.S., or the delay in the Keystone XL pipeline. Washington just doesn't get it. And it's the role of the governor and of the states to push back against that over-regulation. Here at home, we have to set a good example. And I will work to ensure we've got a regulatory process that's fair, transparent, and more efficient. You know, good regulation protects the public health and safety. And we all want clean air, clean water, safe working conditions. But overregulation impedes progress and is a job killer. And so I've challenged all my agency heads to start thinking how they can innovate to make sure we don't become a barrier for creating jobs. Additionally, we've got to strengthen education. And in particular, I want to focus on career and vocational training. And again, my budget reflects that by trying to create a innovative program based on what's going on with Michigan. Michigan has their Michigan Advanced Technical Training Program, and it's a public-private partnership where private sector companies work with schools to develop a curriculum. In the Michigan program, they actually hire kids part-time in high school, pay for their post-secondary education, and then hire them out of that directly into the workforce. And I'd like to see a similar program here in Nebraska, and so we'll be looking for companies who are interested in participating in that. So if you are, please contact my office. The idea would, again, to be a creative pipeline, starting actually, I'd like to see as early as middle school, where kids get exposed to the great opportunities that are available in the trades and follow that through their high school career into their post-secondary education. So you start pulling all these things together, and you start creating that plan for how we grow Nebraska. And so I'm excited to be able to work with folks like you in the chamber, the folks in the unicameral. We've got 18 new senators. I think it's a great class. And Speaker Hadley to really craft this plan so we can make Nebraska a place where people want to be, where people from across the country are coming here to make their home right here in Nebraska. So thank you again for all that you do to make Nebraska a place people want to be. to make Nebraska a place where people are coming to start their homes. I really appreciate all the help you've given me in my administration. As new as it is, the Omaha Foundation really set the bar high and as far as how you can help new governors get started. And so I'm very grateful to the Chamber and David and you in particular for being a leader on this. So thank you all very much. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thanks, Governor. We appreciate your remarks, and we look forward to seeing what we can do together in the next 4 years, and good luck with your first term. It is now my pleasure to welcome to the stage the Mike Corbat, Chairman of Citi. In his position as CEO of one of the world's largest financial institutions, Mike has had the opportunity to travel the world and meet with leaders of the largest businesses in the world, as well as the leaders of many countries. Mike, we appreciate the opportunity to learn from your experience. The stage is yours. Thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Steve, thank you very much. It's great to be here today, Governor, Madam Mayor, ladies and gentlemen. I don't get the chance very often to speak before a business crowd where the governor stands up and speaks about overregulation, and they are actually honoring a banker. So, Tim, congratulations. It's great to be here. It's great to be out of New York. I think today I would describe in my travels as a true Chamber of Commerce day here. Dave tells me it's always like this. For those of you who were anywhere near TV or the Weather Channel, you saw a little bit what was going on or what was supposed to go on in parts of New York. We had a storm. It was called the historic storm flashing on the screen. We were in New York City, supposed to get about 18 to 24 inches. Last I checked, Central Park had somewhere between 4 and 6 inches. Which leads me to my disclaimer today, which I'll deliver in the form of a joke, and that is, why did God create economists? And the answer is to make weathermen look good. So it's great to be here. It's a pleasure to be here in Omaha. And I've got to say the city is truly proud to serve the who's who of Nebraska's corporate stalwarts, from Union Pacific to Berkshire Hathaway, TD Ameritrade, Tenaska, and on. We remain a thriving private bank and have a practice here, which in addition to being a very strong business for us, also keeps us close and in touch with some of the world's most prominent investors and decision makers. These relationships are invaluable to us, as are our partnerships with so many of our public sector people here in the state. In a moment, I'm going to speak more directly to Citi's links to Omaha and Nebraska, but first I'd like to start out speaking more broadly about the financial sector's role in the larger economy, and more specifically, how Wall Street and Main Street work together, they need each other, and couldn't function without each other. This is the Chamber of Commerce, so by definition, you are business people and successful leaders, not just in your community, but in your industries. For the most part, those in business appreciate the crucial role that financial services plays in our industries, communities, and the economy at large. Unfortunately, many people around our country don't. And worse, some even misunderstand our role or try at times to twist it into things sinister. To some extent, I think that's to be expected. Rightly or wrongly, and I believe that there's a balance and a little bit of truth in both, people blame banks for the lion's share of what's led to the financial crisis. The crisis remains fresh in people's memories, and many of its after effects, 6 years later, are still with us, from settlements of legacy issues that keep banks in the headlines with negative news to prolonged and an uneven recovery from what we now call the Great Recession. The economy, and in particular the housing and employment markets, have taken far longer to improve than they have from past recessions. In fact, a recent poll found that more than 60% of Americans today still believe that the U.S. is in a recession. To put that in context, the U.S. probably grew somewhere right around 2.7% last year. It's projected to grow somewhere at around 3.5% this year, and 60% of Americans still believe we're in a recession. So it's no surprise that more than 6 years since the financial crisis, banks still face heavy scrutiny. When I go to Washington, it seems like distrust of banks is one area where many politicians on both sides of the aisle agree. And I have to say that it's certainly heartwarming for me, and I believe for the banking industry, that we can be the issue that actually creates bipartisanship. And with the presidential election cycle getting underway, I don't expect that climate to change over the next couple of years. So you're going to be hearing a lot of one-sided criticism of our industry and to our business models. And I wanted to talk to you today about what the risks and what's at stake. And that's why I thought it important to come here to Omaha to travel 1,250 miles away from New York and from Wall Street and talk about how Wall Street and Main Street are not as far apart as some people would like to make them. I want you to hear the other side of the argument. And I want to ask for your help in how we make the case and we support the business community and the economic community in an even greater way. I hope that you'll take away from this talk three key points. First, and I'm going to speak directly about Citi in this instance, that Citi is a much different company than it was before the crisis. Second, our firm isn't big for simply being big's sake. We're scaled to serve our clients. And third, in an area such as globalization, America needs banks like Citi to help our multinational companies grow, to expand, and to remain competitive in a rapidly changing world. As an industry and as a company, we've taken responsibility for our actions, and it was right and it was necessary for us to do so. Several firms have restructured and changed their business models. Citi, for instance, is a different company than it was less than a decade ago. Simpler, smaller, safer, and stronger. In many ways, we've gone back to our roots, focusing on providing banking services to consumers, private banking clients, to institutions. We've shed more than $700 billion of non-core businesses, 60 businesses around the world, and we're no longer in the insurance business. We're no longer in the hedge fund business. We're no longer in the private equity business. And we aren't an asset manager. We're a bank. That's what we do. That's who we are. And those are our roots. We've completely rebuilt our capital base and liquidity, not just back to, but above pre-crisis levels. We've also lowered the amount of leverage we operate the company with by more than half. Yet, as I talk about these things, little of these are known much to the public. More significant, those of us in finance have not done enough to explain just what it is banks do. Without the trust of the people and the communities we serve, we simply can't do our jobs. Clearly, explaining ourselves is something that we're going to need to do better in order to fulfill our mission. And that mission, in very simple terms, is to enable progress. Harvard historian Niall Ferguson has said that the evolution of credit and debt was as important as any technological innovation in the rise of civilization. Without the foundation of borrowing and lending, the economic history of our world would scarcely have gotten off the ground. He's exactly right. Basic banking, taking deposits and lending, traces back its roots to loans of grain and other commodities more than 4,000 years ago. And to some extent, finance's current unpopularity is nothing new. The industry's reputation has always suffered during and after financial panics and crises, such as the Great Depression. But despite this volatility in the court of public opinion, banking is and remains essential to growth and innovation. In fact, if you look at the very long-term growth chart, one that goes back centuries, what you'll see is a line that was mostly flat and somewhere around the year 1700 had a major inflection And that was more or less when the modern finance system began the first outlines of its present shape today. From that point on, the line shoots upward, but even so, banks are often on the defensive. Now, nearly all people intuitively know that in their personal lives, they need a bank. We all need a place to safeguard our money, deposits, to put our paycheck, and from which to pay our bills. Beyond these daily necessities, however, few think about what banks do and about what banks do specifically for them. For instance, borrowing and lending enable the building, buying, selling, and improvements of homes. And all of us who bear the responsibility of meeting a payroll know the creation of funding and jobs depends decisively on bank lending. I don't need to tell a room of Nebraskans that even the food on our tables wouldn't get there without finance, or if it did, we'd have to grow it ourselves. That covers the big three for most of us: our homes, our jobs, and our daily necessities. But the impact of the financial system hardly ends there. In reality, there is virtually no aspect of modern life that finance does not touch or help to try and improve. From schools, to roads, to airports, to financial instruments such as insurance, the innovations that help make life exciting, none of it would be possible in scope, extent, or quality without a modern financial system. Even governments at every level, state, local, federal, depend on the banking system to meet its payroll, finance its operations, build infrastructure, and so much more. Lending is a core activity of what a bank does. And while it's not quite the fuel that drives the global economy, that would be human talent and initiative, it is the oil that keeps the machine running smoothly. But there's more to it than that. The global economy is big, it's sprawling, it's complex, it's multifaceted. It takes financial products and services well beyond just lending to service it properly. And it takes a bank, or it takes banks of all shapes, sizes, scale, and scope to contribute to that. Now, let me be clear. The louder critics of the banking industry do not aim their argument at banking itself, but rather at certain banks, the so-called big banks. Let me put that in a little context. This argument is most heated here in the U.S., and despite the fact that the world's largest banks are overwhelmingly in Europe and Asia, in fact, only one, and this has changed radically, this will surprise you, that only one of the world's top 10 banks today is here in the U.S. as an American bank. The U.S. banking system is also far less concentrated than its peers overseas, where big banks hold a much higher percentage of total assets in those financial systems. That said, there's no denying that some banks, including the bank I lead, are large. But we're large for very defined and very specific reasons. Put simply, we're scaled to serve our clients and customers. Our size and scope reflect the expectations and needs of our customers and clients. Citi's competitive advantage is around our domestic and international, above our domestic and international peers, is a network that spans 100 countries. In some of these nations, our presence dates back more than a century. Here in the U.S., over 200 years. For a client looking to break into a new market, expand in an existing one, Citi's long-established on-the-ground presence is invaluable. This advantage is a consequence of our history. Citi came into being as a trade finance bank more than 200 years ago when the charter of the First Bank of the United States expired and merchants banded together to pool capital and export goods. That activity is still at the heart of our mission today. Every day, we and other big banks are helping American firms compete on the world stage, create American jobs, and sell their products in many, many markets around the world. In fact, last year alone, city facilitated some $600 billion of trade flows for our clients. About half of that for U.S. domiciled firms or their overseas subsidiaries. And as an example, when Apple opens a store in South Africa or Caterpillar ships a tractor to Thailand, you can be sure there's an American global bank supporting them. So our bread and butter is to serve multinationals. We bank almost all of the Fortune 500, for instance, large institutions and governments that tend to do business in many, sometimes dozens and beyond dozens of countries every single day. They like our scale because they need our scale. From the perspective of, say, a Coca-Cola or a General Electric, having to navigate 20 or more different banks on a daily basis, handling thousands, sometimes even millions of transactions per day, would be a nightmare. And not merely from an expense point of view, but from a regulatory and control perspective as well. The more banks a company's forced to use, the more complexity and risk it assumes. Corporations therefore want and appreciate the service of a one-stop shop. If they can't get it from an American bank, there are plenty of overseas banks that'd be happy to step in or at least try. But the American ones should understand that even if we were to disappear, the demand for our services wouldn't. Far from it. Those services would be simply outsourced to other banks in other countries. The benefits of globalization have been hotly debated, not just here in the U.S., but even more so overseas. But whatever one thinks of its pros and cons, one thing I believe is clear. Globalization is not a fad. In my view, it's a macro trend that's here to stay. Any number of statistics and metrics bear this out. For instance, since at least 1990, global GDP has been shifting from the developing markets to the emerging markets. In that year, North America accounted for almost a third of the world's economic output. By 2050, our researchers forecast that share will barely be 10%. In 1990, what we called emerging Asia, dominated by China, produced just over 5% of the world's GDP. By mid-century, that'll be half. We've already seen this dynamic at work, and today, China is already at or above 12% of the global economy. And if you go back and you look at the years between 2008 and 2012, China accounted for over half of the world's growth. In other words, globalization has transformed the competitive landscape since I joined Citi 31 years ago. And I believe it would be naive to think that American companies would not be harmed if we undermined their ability to sell their goods and services internationally. Global banks help them do exactly that. We provide more than geographic diversity. We also deliver a range of products and services. We help clients meet their payroll. We help supply the finance chain. We help them manage their cash, exchange currencies, and so much else. In addition, of course, to the core of lending, what we do across a range in time frames and terms, simply put, banks like Citi support companies that drive jobs and economic growth. And it's not just established companies and multinationals that need those services. For today's startup, hoping to become tomorrow's giants, sources of early support vary widely, from angel investors to venture capital. But all require, in the end, the capital markets, facilitated by big banks, to redeem those investments through initial public offerings and the liquidity provided by the securities markets. Individuals also benefit from the capital markets to fund and grow pensions, retirement accounts, college savings plans, and many other vehicles for meeting their financial aspirations. It goes without saying that there's a vital place for small and mid-sized regional and community banks. The same way we at Citi know our overseas markets owing to our history on the ground, they know thoroughly the situations in their communities, and they're ideally positioned to lend to local business, support local economies, help people buy homes, and so much else. They're not as well positioned, though, to serve the needs of America's global companies or finance national infrastructure projects or, as an example, help the U.S. military supply our troop and pay its vendors, all of which we do at Citi. Regional and community banks are not our competitors. In fact, many, many are Citi clients. And if banks such as Citi went away, the jobs of our smaller peers would be harder. It wouldn't be easier. The American economy needs banks of all sizes to meet the differing needs of our clients. This is clear to America's business leaders who overwhelmingly report they appreciate the service that big banks offer their firms. It's not as clear to the general public or to some political leaders, which means we have to work harder. I have to work harder in terms of making that case. Sometimes the trends work in your favor. Banks have increased lending to American business by over $230 billion in the last 2 years, helping to fuel our recovery that is, in fact, gaining steam. As far as our economy's near-term and medium-term prospect, Citi's researchers are forecasting 3.5% growth for 2015 for the U.S. economy, which is slightly above the historic average since the Second World War, though a rate that our economy hasn't seen for a full year since before the Great Recession. America had a sluggish start in 2014, largely owing in part to extreme weather and a disruptive winter. But then, as the year came on, the economy surged, especially in the third quarter and closed the year quite strongly. We're now taking that momentum into 2015, partly on low energy prices, which is a bit tough if you had stock in the energy sector, but great for the consumers and businesses where energy is a major cost. We project that the global economy will do slightly better than last year, fueled by a resurgent U.S., further monetary stimulus, as we saw last week in Europe and from the Bank of Japan, and by growth in the emerging markets. Overall, our hope is that the American and the world economies are finally and truly turning the corner. But I've got to caution you, because many times last year, our initial hopes and forecasts had to be later downgraded. There are many reasons to believe that this won't happen this year. And personally, having looked at the data, I'm quite optimistic. But in the end, these trends are beyond anyone's control. Financial institutions are playing and will continue to play a major role in the recovery. Right now, it's estimated that outstanding loans to American small business, the backbone of our economy and job market, stands at about $660 billion. Citi is committed to supporting small businesses and helping create jobs. So 4 years ago, we made a pledge to successfully increase our lending to small businesses. $24 billion over 3 years represented a major increase in our small business lending. Not only did we surpass that goal, we've sustained those levels and don't look back. And today I'm proud to announce that in 2014, we lent another $9.2 billion to American small business, more than double the amount from 5 years ago. Of those loans, $76 million went to small businesses right here in Nebraska. That's not including the $92 million loan we made to Biz Capital, a small business loan fund that has relent $11 million of that to seven Nebraska businesses. We're active here in Nebraska in many other ways as well. In addition to serving the companies I mentioned, we also do significant work with the public sector, including issuing bonds for the Municipal Energy Agency of Nebraska and the Omaha Public Power District. But that's a small part of what we do nationally for states and local governments. Overall, last year, we underwrote more than $100 billion for projects ranging from schools to water mains to highways. As you all know, Detroit has gone through very difficult times. Municipal bankruptcy even put a greater strain on the city's government's ability to deliver essential services. Among those services that was frayed were lighting of streets. At one point, 40% or 32,000 of Detroit's 80,000 streetlights didn't work. In late 2013, we used our own balance sheet and to purchase $60 million worth of lighting for the Detroit Authority and the State of Michigan Finance Authority to raise eventually what became almost $200 million underwritten to repair Detroit's street lighting system and turn the lights back on. 26,000 of those 32,000 lights were fixed within the first 6 months and the remainder shortly thereafter. This is helping improve public safety and a quality of life for Detroit residents, and we're proud to have played a role in that. We're also committed to the communities we serve beyond our business activities. We can't be indifferent to the challenges facing our country, and there are few issues more pressing than the widening wealth gap. It's simply healthy for any society to fracture this way. So we're doing our part to help young people find jobs and be able to participate in the economic growth our country's experiencing. Last year, we launched an initiative called Pathways to Progress, a three-year, $50 million commitment designed to jumpstart the career readiness of 100,000 low-income youth in 10 cities across the U.S. The program is helping young adults set educational and career goals, develop the necessary skills for the 21st century economy, and contribute to the future economic competitiveness of our cities and of our country. It may not seem obvious at first glance how this fits into finance and banking, but the link is undeniable. Finance is a demanding career in what is increasingly a knowledge-based economy. Even those who don't choose it as a career need to grasp the basics in order to be able to build assets and realize their financial aspirations. We try to put our expertise in ways to help make that happen. Education, especially financial education, is a field in which we have a clear comparative advantage, and we strive to leverage our relevant assets to teach the essentials about money to the future leaders of our communities and our country. We have, if I may say so, been fairly successful at that, but knowing the work never ends, and that brings me back to an earlier point. City employs nearly 80,000 people in all, each of every 50 states, the vast majority of them not on or anywhere near Wall Street, but in branches, in operation centers, servicing loans, mortgages, in short, helping customers and strengthening our communities. That's not counting the over 130,000 people we have overseas. It's important that we in positions of leadership inform people about what we do, the way we do it, and the value we provide. And I hope today you as business leaders who understand what we banks do for your companies will add your voices. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
You've been listening to a program from the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce on Noon Forum. We've heard highlights from the 2015 Chamber of Commerce annual meeting, including the keynote address presented this year by special guest speaker Michael Corbat, Chief Executive Officer of Citigroup. He spoke on the topic, The Role of the Financial Sector in Supporting the United States and Global Economies, 2015 and Beyond. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday afternoon, January 27, 2015, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Jane McCain, Special Events Senior Coordinator at the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.